Well, listeners, it's been some time since I've been on the broadcasting of the Building Manager podcast. My name is Matt Osborne and I'm your host. I've been in and out of hospitals since probably early March, so please forgive me for not getting online and getting through some of these interviews that I've had to push back on a number of occasions. I sure do hope that you've been working hard and getting involved into anything you can to improve your skills. However, today we're back online and I'm very, very happy to announce the interview today of a wonderful, wonderful lady who's been in the industry for such a long period of time. Her name is Linda Kypriotakis and she is the Senior Managing Director at the diverse group of companies based up in the beautiful land of Brisbane. Linda's been working around the countryside. She'll share her experience with you very shortly, and I'm really just thrilled to have Linda on the show today. It's been a long time coming. In the meantime, sit back, relax, enjoy the show. And I'll see you on the other side. Well, thank you, Linda, for joining us on the Building Manager podcast today. We have today Linda Kypriotakis, the Senior Managing Director of Diverse Group of Companies. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks very much. Linda, I hope you don't mind maybe just sharing with our listeners a bit on your background and how you developed your business for the diverse group of companies.
Sure. Well, it's a bit of a long story because I'm not a young person anymore, as you know. So I started out as a school leaver and went into a trade apprenticeship in New Zealand and was a sheet metal worker by trade, and I was allied to the roofing industry and commercial construction in New Zealand and building big warehouses and grain silos and things like that. And then I came to Australia when I finished my apprenticeship and I went to uni and did a Bachelor of Architecture. I never really fell in love with being a building designer. I should have done structural engineering or something like that, but I went on to work in the building industry, starting out as a cadet doing contracts administration, and then worked my way up to construction management and site supervision, and became a general manager for a really big construction business in Australia. And then I thought, well, why don't I start my own construction company? So that was about 17 odd years ago now that started my own construction business. And I was on the panel of builders for Energex, which is the energy retailer here in Southeast Queensland.
Yep.
And so I didn't build houses per se, but it was industrial construction and, you know, allied to the energy industry. And I sort of fell into a little niche through a contact to do defective building work inspections for residential strata properties in Queensland. And I went to do a defect inspection for a builder, and the developer then asked me if I would tender on the facilities management. This is back in 2006, and I said, what's facilities management? I had no idea what it was. And so I learned very quickly, and I put in a proposal and won the FM work. And then it was a very steep learning curve of me trying to understand what to do. But I guess with my, my building license and you know, tertiary education in construction, it was quite easy for me to understand how to maintain a building. But it was a bit of an eye-opener for me as a builder, because when you're in the building industry, you can't wait to finish that job and move on to the next one, and you don't even give a second thought to how that building is maintained throughout its lifetime. And it was quite shocking to me to learn that these big $100 million skyscraper apartment buildings are subject to so much regulatory scrutiny throughout the construction process. And then at practical completion of construction, the keys are handed over to a caretaker who's just purchased the management rights.
Yeah.
So I always found that quite fascinating, that you need so many qualifications to design and build a building, but no qualifications to be a facilities manager. So anyway, I started off on the FM side and quickly picked up, you know, maybe a dozen or two dozen more buildings over about 2 years, and started the diverse group of companies. So now we're facilities managers to a number of buildings here in Southeast Queensland under the diverse group. And we're also, I'm still an open licensed builder doing defect inspections under my construction business name.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's sort of how I came into the building management sector, snuck right in the back door from the construction industry.
It's a pretty good life, pretty good working experience. And you mentioned Energex there in Queensland, but back in the day it was Sequeb, for those that remember Sequeb. And I say that my dad worked for Sequeb for 20 years. Yeah, it's a pretty good industry to start in with. And I think what you touched on very briefly there was handing keys over to a multi-million dollar building to someone that you have no idea about. You don't know their working history. You don't know whether they've got skills in specific areas that are required or not. And we briefly touched on that through this interview. So one thing you and I have discussed really is the importance of a building manager, which is what I've just said now, and a caretaker to have accreditation in their roles. And for me, I think personally, I've been trying to harp on about this for years, to get some form of accreditation to people, like you just said, so that we can comfortably hand over keys to this building that's just gone up. But I was so pleased to see the creation of the ABMA and now have the insights to teach the building management code. But perhaps if you could explain to our listeners what the ABMA is and how it came about.
Sure. Yeah, well, just building on that natural progression from the construction industry into facilities management that I gave you my 5-minute life story on. When I started delivering facilities management services here in Queensland, I, upon reflection, actually had a really rapid growth in the FM services delivery part. To pick up over 30 buildings in less than 2 years was quite a rapid growth incline. And I found myself employing people that would, you know, answer my advertisement for a facilities manager. But I found myself having to repeat myself and train them about certain things. And I noticed that even in people that considered themselves to be senior facilities managers, they really didn't have a handle on regulatory compliance, especially around the maintenance of essential services infrastructure.
Mm.
Work health and safety was a real blind spot to most people. And there was this reliance on contractors to tell FMs when servicing and testing and so forth would be done.
Mm-hmm.
So over the years, I developed a company manual, an in-house document that I would use as a training book or a handbook for my facilities managers. And then in 2012, because I'm not a very good trainer, I don't have the patience to answer questions, and it's not really in my nature. So I just started to collaborate with trainers, people who have training qualifications.
Yep.
And I wrote a training program that was specifically designed to teach someone how to be a facilities manager or a caretaker in a residential strata or mixed use strata property. And I developed that program back in around 2010, 2011. And then because I had so much interest in, I called it the ProBMT, which stands for Professional Building Management Training. I called it the ProBMT Diploma of Facilities Management or Building Management.
Right.
And it's not an accredited training program through the Australian qualifications framework. It's just a skills building program. It's part-time over 2 years. And I got such an influx of interest. I actually have trainers, yourself being one of them, that learn how to deliver these types of programs so that when I want to engage a new facilities manager, I send them down to do the ProBMT Diploma of Building Management.
Mm.
So I felt that, you know, that was a good step to me from what I was observing, being a building industry professional from a highly regulated and licensed industry. A facilities manager, in my view, should have an equal qualification because they are maintaining the building for its full life. And that building manager, the higher the quality and the more competency the building manager has, the better the outcomes are for the building owner. And that's dead set my experience. So I wanted to have a qualification there for my staff to be able to capitalise on, which I do to this day. I have a 2-year cadet program. No facilities managers can work for me without completing that program.
Terrific.
And becoming qualified. And so that was step one. And around about 2012, I was sitting on a panel of specialists in the caretaking industry up here in Queensland.
Mm.
And we were meeting on a regular basis. It was basically a bit of a whinge fest where we got together and talked about the difficulties within the caretaking and management rights sector. And, you know, there was a lot of stakeholders there who would express frustration around the emerging disputes between owners' corporation, the bodies corporate and their caretakers, caretakers that were not delivering the duties in accordance with the agreements to the correct standard, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And we seem to be going round and round in circles discussing the issues with caretakers and strata properties.
Yeah.
And my take home from that, my personal take home, was what I already had identified from my perspective, is that if a caretaker does not have capability, they're unlikely to deliver the caretaking duties to the correct standard.
Mm.
And not all standards around caretaking agreements are documented or legislated. It's very clear and well documented what the standards are for maintaining an essential service or a safety installation within the common property. They're well documented in codes and standards in Australia, but legislation is silent on cleaning duties, gardening duties, handy person duties. And these are the predominant duties within a caretaking agreement or a hands-on cleaning contract or a gardening contract or a handy person contract.
Mm.
So arising out of that group of people discussing the difficulties was my, it became even more clear and important to me that as an industry, we need to join forces to set standards for self-assessment within the caretaking industry. Mm-hmm. So with all the emerging difficulties and squabbles between the parties to caretaking agreements, I thought, well, the next step is to set up a totally independent organisation that is fully inclusive, invites all stakeholder groups, is not driven by sponsorship revenue,
mm-hmm.
or other, you know, conflicted revenue streams, and has a best for building focus, with a desire to build capability and recognize that competency in those that have influence over the maintenance of common property. So the Australian Building Management Accreditation Agency was born out of that thinking, which we call the ABMA. So the ABMA is a not-for-profit organisation. It's run entirely by volunteers. Nobody gets paid anything to work right for the ABMA. So the ABMA is the custodian of the Building Management Code, which is delivered and developed for each state and territory across Australia as well as in New Zealand. It's a reference book to existing code, standards, legislation, acts, regulations that impose duties on caretakers and owners' corporations around the maintenance of common property. And where legislation or standards are silent, such as cleaning, gardening, soft services, the ABMA Building Management Code has measurable standards to set an objective benchmark for the industry. I should say that the Building Management Code is edited annually by the Independent Review Panel, which is about, there's over 30 people across Australia that review the ABMA edits for each year. And provide feedback. So the code is a collaboration of different stakeholders in a 360 degree feedback type survey. So it doesn't favour building managers. It doesn't favour owners. It's a very balanced guide to measuring standards for maintenance of common property.
Yeah, and congratulations on getting it going, because it's something that's been needed in this industry for such a long period of time. And I can sort of reflect on when I was living up in Brisbane, going for holidays on the Sunshine Coast, and I'm not going to name the building, but I'd go there, and the relationship I built with the caretakers there, they'd look forward to us getting up to holiday there so he could ask me questions about his caretaking agreements and disputes that he was having with the committees. And I just sort of thought, if you're having this much trouble, I think it's time to sell up. So I don't know whether they've still got the place or not, but I used to spend probably a little bit more time giving advice rather than having a holiday with my family. But I guess now it's really good to be able to walk into a committee meeting even, and you've got your ABMA Building Management Code sitting there, because I can assure you that every committee meeting I've been to, either the chairperson or the strata manager has the act relevant to the state sitting there with them as well. So I think it's just brilliant. So congratulations on getting this up and running.
Thank you. It really is the Bible to the industry. And the ABMA, it's 7 years now that the Building Management Code has been around. And it just goes from strength to strength year after year. And even though it's so the only revenue into this charity business is via sales of the Building Management Code, which enables the ABMA to remain completely independent and fully available to all stakeholder groups, because there's no bias, there's no sponsorship, there's no influence from one or another party. But the Building Management Code, while it's a really helpful guidebook for either committees or building managers, but it doesn't actually pick up the broom and do the cleaning itself. At the end of the day, somebody has to still do the duty. So the ABMA is a guide, but one thing that it's really unique to the ABMA, and I see it now trending in other organisations, is that it offers an accreditation program. It's an industry practitioner accreditation program. It's been around since 2016, and it's a form of recognising skills for those that deliver caretaking or facilities management type services. So if you could be a committee member in a self-managed building where you don't have a caretaker or a facilities manager, and you as a committee, you issue the work orders for the works to be done on the common property yourselves. So you as a committee member in that perspective are acting as a facilities manager. Mm. So you could do some short courses with the AVMA and learn what is required of you in terms of regulatory compliance, what standard do things have to be done to, what mandatory records do you need to obtain, and you can gain an accreditation for your qualifications, and you can go all the way up to recognition of skills as a senior facilities manager, depending on your experience that you can prove and the capability that you can demonstrate. Mm. So now there is a independent recognition of competency in the form of industry practitioner accreditation through the ABMA. And it's we've got a over 1,000 industry practitioners have been accredited all over Australia now.
Wow!
So it's not as popular in Queensland as it is in New South Wales and Victoria, I've noticed.
Wow, there you go. I would have thought Queensland would be the number one go-to for that sort of stuff, but incorrect.
No.
That you wouldn't think about it. And, you know, I think about then the number of times that I hear owners of these developments, I don't know whether they're townhouses or whatever, just doing the gardening, or you've got the committee member who's painting the corridor. You mentioned before there about, you know, some strata developments that don't necessarily want a strata manager, so they're self-managed. And they start doing all of the contract work themselves. I mean, obviously excluding fire services and so forth. But this is where it can really go belly up. So I'm a firm believer then in making sure that these people have the right accreditation and knowledge before they start moving ahead and doing things like that. While we talk about accreditation, I think in qualifications, often building falls behind in their annual compliance, particularly in essential services. And what are you noticing, Linda, in the industry that can help the building manager around this?
Sure. Well, I've been auditing regulatory compliance and the performance of caretakers for over a decade, maybe 13 or 14 years now. And I've never once audited a 100% compliant caretaker ever, which is alarming.
Wow.
In fact, I've fed in this data into university research professors who are interested in analysing it going forward. But the main areas that I see lack of understanding are definitely around the fire services, although that is really improving, I have to say.
Mm.
And work health and safety is another bit of legislation that building managers and caretakers just really struggle to get their heads around. And then there's other things. Electrical compliance is another one where there's regular non-compliances. And then other public safety and public liability things like slip testing, pool deck vindication signage, and other things like that. So the terrible thing about regulatory compliance is that it never really is a problem until there's an incident.
Yeah.
And people will understand even a relatively benign incident like a slip and fall on common property. It's a freezing cold rainy day in Brisbane today. Somebody in the CBD is bound to slip up on the wet tiles in the lobby at some point today.
Yeah.
So if that person who slips up calls their no win, no fee lawyer, they would find that building owner has a large insurance policy mm-hmm. against such things, and they may be able to join not just the body corporate, but the facilities manager and the cleaner for that property in a suit, a claim. So my organisation, we're, as I said, facilities managers, and we've been joined on a number of occasions in exactly this type of scenario. Rainy day, someone slips over, rings the lawyers. The lawyers throw out a net to capture everybody, and before you know it, I'm shelling out an excess on my insurance policy and wondering why my premium is going up.
Yep.
So as a facilities manager, what we have to do is to be able to prove that we are competent, and we can only do that through an audit trail.
Right.
The only way that we can prove that we're competent is because we have records, and we have a ironclad file of all of the regulatory compliance records that are required of us in our role as the facilities manager or caretaker. So this is what the ABMA is all about, is supporting facilities managers or caretakers or those committees that manage their own common property and don't have a caretaker. The ABMA is about helping you to learn, what do I need to do to be compliant? What standard does everything have to be maintained to? And how do I keep those records? Where do I keep them from? Where do I keep them and retain them? And then once you have that capability, it vastly reduces your exposure to being, you know, sued for. Yeah,
most definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Look, I can recall on a number of occasions getting the mop out, sweeping the foyers, property there we managed in Redcliffe, out there constantly. Because we were near the ocean, you get the ocean breeze in, mop, and then you get the dry mop, so the tiles are dry, signs go out. It's just practice, and you're right. People really do need to be taught all of this information, because you can't go around with your horse blinkers on every day of the week, because in the end, like you say, it's going to end up in court.
Well, it really is what they say, you know, time is money. And when you're competent, regardless of what it's, if you're a competent cook, you can make a lovely batch of scones in a couple of minutes, and everyone's sitting down 20 minutes later to a lovely afternoon tea. But if you're incompetent, it'll take you hours to try and make those scones and your result would be awful. It's the same with hairdressing. I mean, if I went out tomorrow and bought a hairdressing salon, I'd be cutting people's ears and people would be suing me for really bad haircuts. So, you know, it surprises me that people would enter into a business like caretaking or facilities management with no skills, no training and no qualification, because not only do you expose yourself to damages claims through negligence or, you know, incident occurring on the common property, but it wastes time. There's a lot of time spent in doing things the wrong way and having to fix them up. And on top of that, you have that dreadful, you know, emotional experience with your client who's dissatisfied with you. And I can't think of anything worse than being the owner of management rights, living on site with a committee that don't like you or don't appreciate you, and this is your home. So I see emerging in the management rights sector a trend towards bodies corporate voting down on top-up motions on agreements, and committees and bodies corporate trending towards letting long-term 25-year agreements run out. And then liking the idea of a shorter term, maybe 10-year agreement that would be tendered, and with, you know, people throwing their hat in the ring for facilities management rather than management rights being sold and extended and topped up for 25 years. So it's my perspective is that management rights are are an excellent investment for people, and having an on-site caretaker is a wonderful asset to an owner's corporation or a body corporate in circumstances where you have a wonderful caretaker who's highly skilled and has excellent customer service skills. So there isn't if a building has a highly skilled caretaker who is very adept at managing the client relationship, that committee are very happy to sign the extension and the top up and and have a great relationship with that building manager. So now's the time for management rights owners to get these qualifications and build capability, so at least they're able to deliver their duties to the correct standard and not be accused of failing to do their work under the agreement. And and through that, just by having that competency, they instill trust in their committees.
Yep.
And they become this trusted advisor. And then the committees start to depend on them and value them highly. And all of a sudden, the value of the management rights goes up because the caretaker has made himself indispensable to that committee.
Yeah, so I guess, Linda, then having, an experienced caretaker / building manager, facilities managers, someone that's doing their job appropriately and knows their job, knows their job well, knows the committee well, knows what they like, knows what they don't like. And this is all just part of what has to happen. And there's a lot of people out there that are even afraid to go and approach the committee. I've seen it so many times speaking to building managers who get told, oh, no, you shouldn't be speaking to the committee. But why are you doing that? That's just craziness. You've got to know these people. You've got to know what they like, what they don't like, what floor they're on, the name of their cat, the dog, brother, sister, it all forms part of this relationship. And just having that knowledge to be able to say, oh, g'day, Matt, how's Lee going today? I saw a walk through last week with your dog, Frank, or whatever, that all has to happen. And just getting that repetition, not just with the committee, but also, as you say, with the building owners, is just so vitally important when it comes down to management rights, management agreements. And I can't stress it enough that it's just so important.
It is a people business. That's the bottom line, that it is a people business. You're dealing with people. And sure, you have some practical duties to do, but I would say that 80% of your game plan should be on managing the client relationship.
For sure.
And 20% of your focus should be on getting your duties done in the background. So in my organization, I've got a fabulous operations manager. You know him, David Ross.
Yep.
Dave's been a part of my business for about 15 years, and he is a lovely person, and the facilities management customers love him because he knows how to manage the client relationship.
For sure he does, yeah.
But by far, I'm the more technically astute person in the business, but they prefer David. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm very competent, but I'm not as good as he is at managing the client relationship. So, but what I am very good at is reassuring people that I'm taking care of them and I know what's happening in their building and I know how to fix their problems and solve their problems for them. So you need that balance. You need the combination of confidence. You as a caretaker or facilities manager, you need to know everything in that building inside and out and be confident and be able to put your finger on the answer straight away or find the information very quickly. There's nothing worse or more embarrassing than your client, the committee, telling you something about your building that you didn't know. To me, that's a fail. You've failed. So you need that balance of knowing everything about the building, every nook and cranny, every single thing that's going on. You need to be the champion, the driver, the leader, the trusted person.
Mm.
And then on the other side of it, as you mentioned, you have to be able to get along with everybody and act professionally. And, you know, you don't have to be everyone's friend, but you do need to set your prejudices and apprehensions to the side and act kindly and, you know, professionally to everyone.
And take it on the chin. And I'll never forget what someone said to me, and you know him, Graham Basket. From day one, he'd always said to me, "Matt, don't ever take anything too seriously. They're not after you, they're after the company." And, you know, that was something that I just really shared with all of the building managers that I trained over the career, to say, "Hey, you know what? They're not getting angry at you. They're just getting angry at the company because they don't want it. They don't want it here." So perform your duties, do it well, get to know your customers, get to know your people, and you know what? You're not going to fail. So don't be disheartened if someone gets upset at you for some reason. So,
well,
you know,
life isn't easy.
No.
Matt. You know, life isn't easy. And if anyone ever told you life was meant to be easy and, you know, smell like roses all day long, well, that's a misrepresentation. Life is hard. Work is hard. That's why it's called work. And people get stressed and have things going on in their lives, and we're not mind readers, but
no.
All we can do is take care of our own corner. Make sure that we know what we're doing and we're acting professionally. And yeah, it doesn't mean you have to be a pushover, of course, but
no.
You're right.
Yeah,
there's people who have their own things going on, and half the time it's nothing to do with you at all.
Spot on. I think you hit the nail on the head before when you said just to you know, just to advise the building owners that everything's under control, and that's why you're here, to perform your duties. So very, very important. So you building managers out there listening, caretakers out there listening, take note. Linda, I wrap it up here, and I really just want to say thank you very much for coming on to the Building Manager Podcast. I really enjoyed talking with you. I could probably talk with you all day, I reckon.
That's nice. Thank you.
I wish you and everyone in the diverse group of companies, including David, he's a great bloke, as you say, the best for 2022. I know I'll see you soon. So thanks once again for being on the podcast.
It's my pleasure, and thanks for the invitation. And you take care of yourself.
I will. Thanks, okay. Linda. Speak soon.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
Wow, what an episode to get us going on the Building Manager Podcast. My name is Matt Osborne, and I've been your host. Thanks very much also to Linda Kypriadakis from the diverse group of companies for joining me on the show today. You building managers, caretakers, those that are looking to get management rights, this particular show today is for you. Also for the committees out there, the strata managers, this is really something that you really need to take note of. The ABMA, or the Australian Building Management Accreditation Building Management Code, is vitally important to your business. Whether you're running management rights, whether you're a caretaker building manager, I cannot stress the level of importance that this is for you, to know what to do, to know your rights, to know what happens at handover, whether it's new or existing, obligations for builders, developers. It's just so important to understand exactly what this building management code is about. For those that are interested, I'm actually now able to teach the certificate in the Australian Building Management Accreditation. So you can reach out to me, matt@elitebma.com, and I'll be happy to line up a time for you and date so that we can get on to teaching all about the Australian Building Management Accreditation. If you want to have a look, you can get onto the website abma.org.au and get some more information for yourself before coming back to me. I can teach the accreditation in Queensland, in Victoria, South Australia, Western Australia, and of course across the ditch there in New Zealand. So reach out to me when you're free. Thanks again for joining me on the Building Manager Podcast. My name is Matt Osborne. You building managers out there, thanks again for looking after all of your people in the building. I look forward to being back on the show. Take care. Speak to you soon. Bye for now.